You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves fan site on the Fan Sided Network. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy hump day. Happy return to the NBA playoffs after an off night on Monday. We'll talk briefly about that here off the top, about game three of Nuggets Lakers, and then also a little bit of other NBA news. The Chicago Bulls hired a new head coach. The Timberwolves bubble is now officially underway. We've got at least some social media activity from the team, so we know that it's happening, at least. And then today, I want to spend most of the show getting into Big Board 2.0. We started this on Tuesday's show, the second version of my draft Big Board. We only got through the top four prospects on Tuesday, so I want to go through another three, maybe four prospects today as we continue to motor through that list. First, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whichever platform you prefer to get your podcasts on, and follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. A reminder, the show is 5 days a week. You heard that right. Monday through Friday, 5 days a week. So if you did miss one of the shows earlier this week or last week, you can go ahead and go back and listen to them. The start of this Big Board, again, was on yesterday's show. That's Tuesday of this week. All right, so NBA playoffs. On Tuesday evening was game three of Nuggets and Lakers. The Lakers, of course, had a 2-0 lead on the Nuggets, and Denver jumped out to an early lead, actually led by 10 points at halftime, and built a lead that grew as large as 20 before the Lakers got almost all the way back in the fourth quarter. Jamal Murray was awesome and ultimately led the Nuggets to a win. They won 114-106, so an 8-point victory from Denver. And the series is now 2-1. The next game will be Thursday evening, also on TNT, and the Nuggets will have an opportunity to pull even, and obviously a huge game, a huge swing game in this series. But Denver was able to win and stay alive. Big, I guess, high points from the game in terms of the numbers. Murray, as I mentioned, was awesome. He had 28 points, 12 assists, 8 rebounds, 2 steals, 4 turnovers. Shot 10 of 17 and was 4 of 8 beyond the arc. Also, Jeremy Grant had 26 points in this game. Got to the free throw line 12 times and made 10 of them. Jokic had 22, 10 and 5, and was solid throughout per usual. And the Nuggets really, really relied on Jamal Murray in this one. LeBron was really good, had 30 and 11, or I should say 30 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds, 2 blocks, 2 steals. And outside of him, per usual, it was James and it was Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis had 27 points, only 2 rebounds in this game somehow in 43 minutes. He also shot 0 of 4 from beyond the arc. So basically, this was LeBron, a little bit of AD, and then Jamal Murray and Jeremy Grant really took over the game for the Denver Nuggets. So happy to see this series at least be close. We've got two series now that are both 2-1 after 3 games. And on Wednesday, of course, will be game 3 of Boston and Miami. Miami still holds the 2-1 lead after Boston won in game 3. So a similar start to both series. And here's hoping for a 6 or 7 game series on both sides of things. I think we all deserve it here in the midst of 2020. And I mean, we're talking NBA Finals basketball at the end of September. So, or I guess conference finals basketball, and it'll be finals basketball by the time we're in October. So that's NBA playoffs update. The other thing notably that I wanted to mention, the Chicago Bulls hired a new head coach. It's not any of the names that had been previously floated, at least initially when they let go of Jim Boylan and opened the search. It is in fact a coach who was just recently let go, or I guess mutually parted ways with his previous team. And that's Billy Donovan, the former Oklahoma City Thunder coach, of course, the former coach of the University of Florida, the Gators. Donovan has been a really good coach in Oklahoma City. You know, so many coaches make the jump from coaching at the collegiate level to the NBA, and it just doesn't go well for whatever reason. Obviously, Donovan's a different case than, you know, the most recent case being John Beilein going from University of Michigan to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that was an abject disaster when he was ultimately left the team midway through this last season. But there's tons of examples going throughout the last few decades of these college coaches not making that jump very successfully. And Donovan, by all accounts, really got the Thunder to overachieve when their personnel was kind of in flux. They were going into somewhat of a rebuild over the past couple of years, but yet they still found a way to be competitive with these weird 2- and 3-guard lineups, 2-point guard lineups, 3-guard lineups, and get the most out of first Russell Westbrook before he was traded, and then out of Chris Paul when the team could have turned around and flipped him. And he was basically, it's understandable why Donovan and the Thunder are far apart and just chose to part ways, because the front office wasn't giving him a whole lot to win with. And Donovan was still making something out of it. The Thunder probably want to start fresh all the way around, want to bring in a new coach and really kind of rebuild the team. Instead of, I guess they were too good this year, you know, doing it on the fly and making the postseason when they weren't really expected to do that. There was a chance they were going to drop off considerably, but Chris Paul was so good and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was so good, that just didn't happen. So in terms of the Donovan fit in Chicago, I like it. It'll be really interesting to see what the front office does. If they do turn around and make some big moves, if they trade Zach LaVine, if they, you know, move on from Lauri Markkanen, who's going to be due for a big extension. He's got some big contracts they're inheriting there. Otto Porter Jr. Recently they signed Thaddeus Young, Tomas Satoransky were recent additions, and this team just underachieved again this year under Jim Boylan. So it'd be interesting to see how the front office dynamic, the new front office in Chicago, meshes with Billy Donovan and what the thoughts are on their roster. They've got a number of intriguing pieces that could be traded. Not a ton of young upside outside of Markkanen and LaVine. They've got a couple other pieces, Wendell Carter, obviously, and you know, Chris Dunn's a solid backup point guard. They've got some depth on that team. It's just kind of a weird mix of players and one of the more interesting rosters, actually, if you look at what's going to happen next. So the Bulls do have their new head coach. All right, next up, I want to talk briefly about the start of the Wolves bubble. We don't know much yet, but there is at least some movement from the Timberwolves Twitter account, some confirmation that the bubble has indeed gotten underway. And then I want to launch right into Big Board 2.0 and pick up there with pick number 5, or I should say player number 5 on the big board. Tuesday was National Voter Registration Day. And the Minnesota Timberwolves were a big part of that locally in the Twin Cities. They were out in the community. They posted photos on Twitter of Crunch, the mascot, and others down in South Minneapolis to help folks register to vote, give them information and resources. So they've been, and that's, again, we talked about this a week, maybe 2 weeks ago now, the Rock the Vote, or I guess the Wolves are calling it the Pack the Vote campaign that the Wolves links, Iowa Wolves and T-Wolves Gaming are all working together on. So cool that they're doing that. Cool that the players are going to get involved as well. And the Wolves also released their roster officially. We talked about that a few days ago when it was basically announced, you know, who is going to be on that roster. It's everybody minus Juancho Hernan Gomez, who's of course filming a movie with Adam Sandler, minus Evan Turner, who was not going to be a part of anything, and Omari Spellman, who the Wolves are working to trade, plus Canyon Berry and Lindell Wigginton from the Iowa Wolves as 14th and 15th players on the roster to allow the Wolves to play some true 5-on-5 with subs and have a competitive back and forth once they get into the scrimmage, the 5-on-5 portion, which I believe is actually next week. So the Timberwolves tweeted late on Tuesday about, they said, let the bubble begin. They posted 3 photos, one of what looks to be the team watching a virtual, either a Zoom call or a recorded video from Glenn and Becky Taylor, who I guess it makes a lot of sense that they weren't there in person, given everything going on and the fact that it is in fact a bubble. D'Angelo Russell playing ping pong, which is always fun. And then Jake Lehman playing what I believe is Golden Tee on an arcade Golden Tee. So it looks like a good time. It looks like they're supplying these guys with plenty of fun and recreation. Gerson Rosas had said in the team's, I guess it wasn't a press release, but the article they had written on Timberwolves.com about how they're not just going to do basketball. They're also going to have fun and entertainment for these guys in the bubble. I mean, they're going to be there for 2+ weeks. And they're also going to do, in addition to team building, they're going to do some community-centric activities as well, whether it be getting out the vote, work on social injustice and social justice initiatives and, you know, a variety of things kind of in that realm. So it's going to be a well-rounded couple of weeks. If we know anything about Gerson Rosas and his front office, it's that they put a lot of thought behind this and everything's going to be programmed out and they're going to be very intentional with everything that they do. So looking forward to seeing more, hopefully hearing more about what's going on within the Timberwolves bubble here moving forward. All right, let's go ahead and get back into the Locked On Wolves Big Board 2.0. If you missed Tuesday's episode, go ahead and go back and listen to that for my reasoning behind picks 1 through 4 or players 1 through 4 on the board. I'll just run through those quickly here. The brief, I guess, description of this exercise is I'm looking at this as the Timberwolves Big Board, how I would rank players based on the type of player they are, the prospect that they are, and also their fit with the Timberwolves. So it's considering both of those things. And then within that, there's going to be tiers of players that help us kind of decide, for instance, if the Wolves, say the Wolves had, and they don't, but say they had the 5th pick in this draft. And, or actually a better way to say this is the Wolves have the number 1 pick. Could they trade back to the number 3 to Charlotte and still get a player who's in their number 1 tier? If the Wolves, we don't know this, but say that they have Ball, Anthony Edwards, Melo Ball, Anthony Edwards, and Killian Hayes all in their first tier, and they can trade back to 3 and pick up an asset and still get somebody in their first tier, and the difference between their first and third ranked player isn't massive, they would do that. They likely wouldn't trade back to 4 if it falls back into their second tier and there's, by definition, there are a much bigger chasm between their number 1 and number 4 players. So we'll talk about tiers here as we go as well. So numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4 on my big board currently are LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards at number 2, Killian Hayes at number 3, and Obi Toppin at number 4. This is a little bit different from 1.0. So if you caught 1.0 back in June and July, primarily, and kind of stretched it out over a few weeks, it is a little bit different. So the current rankings, again, LaMelo Ball at number 1, Anthony Edwards at number 2, Killian Hayes at 3, and Obi Toppin at 4. Number 5 on my current big board was actually at number 5 on my last big board, and that's Devin Vassell, the wing player from Florida State. Vassell is basically your classic 3-and-D player. And while it's the quote-unquote 3-and-D player is maybe less in vogue than it was a few years ago, because that was kind of... It became a thing right around the time the three-point revolution started when there's always been two-way players, but that usually describes a star or somebody who can truly impact the game on both sides, like a Jimmy Butler, for instance. And the 3-and-D player started to become a thing when three-pointers became that much more important and defense was maybe, you know, the game was a little bit faster and teams had star wings and you needed a lockdown wing and also someone who could contribute on offense that wasn't necessarily going to be a high usage player outside of knocking down open threes. Now, and this isn't all teams, but teams like the Wolves are going to more of a, you know, they want to be able to play 4-out or 5-out. They want to have bigs that can handle the ball. They want to have as many players as possible on the floor that can shoot the 3. So the idea of having 3-and-D players, it's still very important, but the Wolves don't even really have a 3-and-D player. I mean, Josh Okogie provides the defense, not a 3-point shooter. Same with Jarrett Culver at this point in his career, and his offensive game does not at all revolve around an outside shot. Jake Lehman isn't a good enough 3-point shooter. He's more of a 4 at this point anyways. James Johnson's a very average 3-point shooter and really plays more of a big man type role in today's game. The Wolves don't have that prototypical 3-and-D guy. They had Allen Crabbe briefly last year and he wasn't good in a Timberwolves uniform. He was that guy before his injuries a couple of years ago. He did that. He was that sort of a player where he was an okay defender. He was never truly a lockdown defender, but his offensive game revolved around the 3-point shot, played solid defense. Devin Vassell is that player. He's 6'7". He's got a 6'10" wingspan. He's still not even 20 years old. And he shot almost 42% over his 2 years at Florida State, 41.7%. He's fantastic off the dribble. Catching and shooting isn't quite as good for him percentage-wise, but that usually comes easier for players. And so if he's better off the dribble, the catch and shoot 3 should come, and he's going to get every opportunity to improve on catch and shoot 3s with an NBA team. That's something teams are going to focus on. Whoever drafts him will focus on. He improved drastically year 1 to year 2 at Florida State when it came to catch and shoot. And so that's more evidence that that's going to continue. He isn't a great defender. So again, I mean, you know, like some of these other 3-and-D players I mentioned, he's not a fantastic defender, but he's really big, 6'7 with a 6'10 wingspan, and he has great instincts. He plays very good off the ball defense because of his size and instincts, and he plays hard. And those are all things that are extremely important to talent evaluators, is that you not only know where to be and when you need to be there, but you've got the size to impact the game, and you're also going to play hard, and you're going to get there fast, and you're going to, you know, move from point A to point B, and you're going to show, and you're going to recover, and you're going to stunt, and you're going to challenge a shot and get back, and you know, run the floor hard, and all of those things are true about him. Really, the only downside is, the catch and shoot three has a little bit of work that needs to be done, and he doesn't really do anything off the dribble, doesn't really get to the rim. But again, you're looking for a guy who, if he were to be drafted in the top 5 or 6 or 7 and step in to, say, a team like the Timberwolves, he's going to be your fourth or fifth option, even on one of those teams. He's going to be the type of player who comes in and can be a fourth option on the offense. The Wolves don't want a guy who's going to be high usage and use up a lot of possessions. They've got D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns to do that, and probably Malik Beasley. So Vassell on the Timberwolves could probably start on the wing between Beasley and some combination of Juancho Hernangómez, Jake Layman, James Johnson, whoever starts at the four. And Vassell would be probably the fourth option. He could step in and likely be a rotational player from day one. And that's the type of role that he could play in Minnesota. And it's why he's number 5 on my big board and hasn't moved. I truly think he could be an exciting trade back target for the Wolves if they were to move back to Charlotte's pick, maybe the Bulls pick. Charlotte's at 3, Chicago's at 4, the Knicks are at 8. If they slid back to any of these picks, I'd be surprised if he's still on the board at 8, but you never know. Other possible picks that could be had: Atlanta at 6, Cleveland at 5 is talking about selling their pick, but I don't know what else they're going to trade along with that pick or who they'd want on the Timberwolves necessarily, unless they like Jarrett Culver, although just a year ago they picked Darius Garland over him at number 5 in the 2019 draft. So there's plenty of opportunities to slide backwards, and no doubt the Wolves have played out all these different scenarios. But if they can slide back to, you know, Chicago's pick at 4, Cleveland at 5, Atlanta at 6, Detroit 7, New York 8, and take a guy like Vassell, pick up an asset along the way, maybe it's a second rounder, maybe it's a first rounder next year, maybe it's an existing NBA player, somebody who could step in and help right away, then that's a win. And this is the type of player that you'd want to target in such a move. So definitely something to think about. And that is why he's number 5 on my list. All right, next up, I want to get into numbers. We'll do 6 and 7 here today as well. Before we do that, let's talk about our fantastic friends at Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting candy bar of all time. You've heard me say it before. I mean it. It is fantastic. It is more delicious than ever. They've improved the taste, which I didn't think was possible. The wrapper, the logo, all that's been redone too. Brand new packaging. There's also 6 brand new flavors. That makes 18 total amazing flavors. There are already 12, 6 more new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. This is the protein bar that tastes exactly, and I mean exactly, like a candy bar. The bars are all covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. They're perfect if you're health conscious, if you're trying to lose or maintain weight while still indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are all low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and perfect if you're on a keto diet. And now, for a limited time only, you can get a free cooler with your purchase while supplies last. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your next order. Doesn't have to be your first order. If you've already enjoyed Built Bar, go back, builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, get $10 off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. All right, number 6 and 7 on Big Board 2.0 here at Locked On Wolves. Number 6, Tyrese Haliburton, the wing from Iowa State. Tyrese Haliburton is, in a lot of ways, a similar prospect, not the same, in a lot of ways, a similar prospect to Killian Hayes. Killian Hayes, incidentally, was number 1 on my big board last time around. He currently sits at number 3 on my big board. They are similar size, similar playing style. Both have a little bit of D'Angelo Russell to their game. And that is part of the reason why he's so high on my list. There's also a little bit, and I said this with Killian Hayes too, a little bit of a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as well. Halliburton, 6 foot eight, 6 foot five with a 6 foot eight wingspan. He is a little bit more of a playmaker. He's going to lean playmaker point guard than versus Hayes, who's a little bit more of a shooter. But Halliburton has some more consistent range. He's actually probably a little bit of a better shooter overall than Killian Hayes. And also has really good vision in terms of knowing where to be on the court when he is playing off the ball. He is not a great one-on-one defender, which is, again, similar to Killian Hayes. And he really doesn't do well in the paint in terms of finishing at the rim. And to me, that's the biggest reason why he's here instead of Killian Hayes, why Killian Hayes is three spots higher on my board. D'Angelo Russell, one of his shortcomings is getting to the free throw line. And he was actually better last year than he was in Brooklyn when he was an all-star. And I believe even the year before that in Brooklyn, both years with the Nets. But Russell still isn't great at getting into the paint, getting to the free throw line. Part of that is a little bit of a lack of athleticism. He's a decent athlete, but he's not super athletic. And he doesn't love contact. So he's not great at avoiding contact. When he tries to avoid it, he misses shots. When he gets contact, he's not strong enough to finish through it. And I'm talking about D'Angelo Russell. Some of the same issues and worse at this point are true of Tyrese Halliburton. He's got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger if he's going to finish through contact at the NBA level. He isn't a great athlete either, which is, again, one of D'Angelo Russell's biggest issues. It's also a little bit of a concern with Killian Hayes, but even more so with Tyrese Halliburton is that he's just kind of a decent athlete. And that's why he's number six. However, all of the good parts of D'Angelo Russell, a lot of that is also true of Tyrese Halliburton. So he would be a secondary playmaker who can knock down an open shot and score a little bit in transition and know how to, you know, where to be on the court, an intelligent player. And that's why he's number six on the board. But that's also, you know, he's not higher because he has some of those same limitations. All right. The last player I want to talk about today is number seven on my big board 2.0. And that is Patrick Williams, the forward from Florida State. I had him quite a bit lower on my last big board. In fact, he was in the mid teens, I think actually at 14 on the previous version of my big board. However, upon further review, I think that Patrick Williams could potentially be a near perfect fit for what the Timberwolves are looking for. He's a little bit bigger than a lot of these other wings. He's not a true, you know, 3-and-D profile of a 6'5", 6'6" guy with a 6'7" or 6'8" wingspan. He's a legit 6'8" with a 6'11" wingspan and can do a number of different things offensively while still being a fantastic off-ball defender and shot blocker in the paint. And that's why he's so attractive for this team. The Wolves need somebody that has those defensive instincts, that knows where to be and when, and yet still can bring something to the table offensively. He is actually one of my new favorite prospects in the draft. He's just an intelligent player, super athletic, can make three-pointers. His free throw percentage in college suggests that he can continue to become a better shooter from outside the arc. He's a fantastic help defender, really athletic, a good team defender, can defend well within the team concept, which again is one of the main concerns that the Timberwolves have. They don't have very many of these savvy team defenders who know where to be and when. Juancho Hernan Gomez is a pretty good example of one. He's not ultra athletic. He's not ultra long, but he's big enough and smart enough and knows where to be and when to make him a net, really kind of a neutral defender. He's not a negative when it comes to being on the floor at the four for the Timberwolves. Patrick Williams can step in and at least be that, but with more athleticism, with more size, a better shot blocker. Hernan Gomez is not a shot blocker. So Patrick Williams profiles as someone, because of his 6'11 wingspan and athleticism, should be able to guard bigger players. He should be able to play, even at 6'8", play the four at the NBA level. And because of his athleticism, and again, his wingspan, he should be switchable down onto threes and even onto twos in the pick and roll game, similar in some ways to James Johnson. There's actually some similarities there between the two. He hasn't been a consistent three-point shooter, but because, again, of that free throw shooting, his free throw percentage and a repeatable shot motion, he's a player who projects to be a solid kind of stretch four player in today's NBA who can also be a really good defender. He doesn't do much yet in terms of being a playmaker, but there's because of his instincts, really on both ends of the floor, and his athleticism, for all those reasons, there's reason to believe that he can become a little bit of a playmaker in some ways, again, like James Johnson, where he can handle the ball in the offense, initiate some offense as needed. He's not going to be running the Wolves offense as a rookie. He's not going to be running anybody's offense as a rookie. But to be able to put the ball on the floor in transition and orchestrate a little bit in the fast break, that's something that Patrick Williams should be able to do. And for me, I think he fits exactly what the Wolves would like to have at the four. And that's somebody with who's not, you know, a full on, you know, 6'11" traditional power forward. It's not Gorgui Dieng. It's not who, of course, is more of a center. They want to play the 6'8", 6'9", Jake Lehmans, the James Johnsons, those types of players at the four next to Karl-Anthony Towns. I don't think they want to play Naz Reid very much next to Karl-Anthony Towns, although I think it can be effective. Personally, I think it can be effective in stretches. They want to play a guy like Patrick Williams, who's athletic, 6'11" wingspan, switchable, can make a little, you know, can make some threes, can make free throws when he's fouled, can score in transition, can become a little bit of a playmaker if need be. That's what the Wolves are looking for at the four. It's also why I think that, like I talked about this on Tuesday's show. I like Obi Toppin. I don't think the Wolves want Obi Toppin. I don't think he's a fit at the four for what Ryan Saunders, what Gerson Rosas and that front office and coaching staff want to be doing. Patrick Williams likely is a fit. And so I still have him at number seven on my board simply because there's got to be some value. The Wolves would have to trade back. They're not going to take him at one. They're not going to trade back with Charlotte to three, and they're not likely to take him at three. But if you can slide back to four with Chicago or five with Cleveland, six with Atlanta, and grab Patrick Williams before there's a run on the 3-and-D type players, likely in the mid to late lottery, because there's several of those guys coming up on my big board, then that's a trade back the Wolves would have to look long and hard at. And sitting here now on September 23rd, it would not surprise me, we're what, 7 weeks out from the draft roughly, if Patrick Williams ends up on the Timberwolves, whether it's a trade back or if they surprise everybody and take him really early, or if somehow he falls and the Wolves trade up from 17 and take him. But he's profiles as the type of player that the Timberwolves are likely going to be targeting in this year's draft, based on everything we know about Gerson Rosas and the pattern of moves that they've made over the past 15 months or so. All right, that's through the top seven on the big board. We'll get to 8, 9, and probably 10 on Thursday's show, as well as we'll talk about Wednesday night's playoff game between the Celtics and Heat and any other Timberwolves news that comes out of the bubble. Again, we are daily, so we'll be back on Thursday as well as Friday this week. That's all we have for you on today's show. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast. Of course, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, really anywhere you can get your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.